Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by Go Boys. Coming up on the show, Jonathan Von Tobel of VSiN will join us. We will discuss the weekend in the tournament, look ahead to the Sweet 16, and what an uneventful weekend it was. Last time we talked, it was Thursday night going into Friday. So you know what? Thursday was a little bit of a bore outside of Oakland. You know, Samford made a late run. And bad job by me. I was watching that game with a few other games on Thursday night. I didn't realize what a terrible call that was Thursday night against Samford. But either way, I said, you know what? It happens. Maybe we'll get a better day Friday, which we did. Yale beating Auburn and Colorado beating Florida all within like a 1 minute, 90 second span was really incredible. That Yale Auburn ending was incredible, where you thought you had it with Yale, then Auburn had time after time to try to tie it or win it, including a three at the buzzer. But after that, and again, the Friday night games were decent. Got a couple upsets with Grand Canyon, with James Madison. But Saturday and Sunday, and again, I'm recording this with some of these games still going on. By the time I talk to JVT, everything will be finished. But I decided to go a little early because UConn is burying Northwestern, Alabama in control against Grand Canyon. The other games are final. Clemson, Baylor got close for a little bit, but I mean, the weekend was a bore. I mean, it's all chalk, no upsets, no Cinderella. Again, by the time I talk to JVT, we'll know if Yale won. That could be the story. Maybe Houston gets knocked off. That would be a story. But as of now, all the ones are still there. All the twos are still there. I mean, a couple of threes knocked off. Kentucky loses, but I mean, you got 10 of the 12 best tournaments pretty much still in the tournament. So very unusual. Look, it happens. We're not entitled to these upsets. I think, you know, the last few years, I remember as a kid, a 15 beating a two was like unheard of. It was like a once in a decade kind of thing. And we got spoiled the last 3 years. Not only is a 15 beating a two, but they've gone on to make the Sweet 16, which had never happened until 3 years ago. And then we get it 3 years in a row. So well, that's actually not true. Gulf Coast made it, I think, a decade or so ago. They did win two games to get it. But I mean, look, it's three times in 3 years that a 15 is not only beating a two, but going to the Sweet 16. So we've gotten spoiled with these. And we did get the 13 over the four with Oakland. We did get Yale beating Auburn, which was fun. Another 13-4, and Auburn was a good four. And again, if Yale is somehow able to beat San Diego State in a few hours, that will be the story of the tournament heading into the second weekend. But it happens. I mean, Saturday was okay. We got, Creighton, Oregon was an absolute classic where Oregon's got to be sick to their stomach. I know you could say, hey, it's chalk money. It's house money. We weren't even expecting to be in the tournament. We win our Pac-12 tournament, win a game. All right. We lost a tough one. We'll live with it. I guess that's true. But when you're up four with 20 something seconds left, about to go to the Sweet 16 and you don't get there, that's a tough one. That's a really tough one. There's a big difference between the round of 32 and the Sweet 16. I mean, Sweet 16 is, I'm going to say rarefied air, but that's, look, you're making it to the second weekend. That's a special thing to make it Sweet 16. I think, you know, when coaches retire, when coaches die, you always say, hey, made this many Final Fours, made this many Sweet 16. It's kind of a resume thing. So, and look, we're going to be favored in the Sweet 16, but you go into that game maybe with a puncher's chance and to be in the Elite Eight. So brutal loss for Oregon. NC State, Oakland was good. That went into overtime. That was clunky at the end, but that was an exciting overtime game. Other than that, I mean, Tennessee, Texas got close for a little bit, but you know, you get these games. And here's the thing. The schedule is so not viewer friendly. And I remember it used to be for years growing up watching this tournament, everything on the weekends was afternoon. And especially by Sunday, everything was done by 7 o'clock. And it was, well, honestly, a little bit depressing. It was like Christmas when you're done opening your presents. There's a little bit of a letdown. There's a little bit of, you bummed out Sunday night, everything's over. But now with this new schedule, the new TV format, you start one game around noon. Then 3 hours later, you play another game. And then 3 hours later, then the action starts where there's gaps between these games. There's only one game at a time. Like Purdue, Utah State on Sunday is a bore. You're sitting there for 3 hours with no game to watch. You got a good game in Villanova, Colorado. What that kid for Colorado, De Silva, was doing on the last possession. Down four with like 7 seconds left. He just walks it up and throws a three at the buzzer. I mean, it's the spread was 4.5. Maybe he was looking out for people that took the 4.5. But that was a strange sequence. But oh, look, the schedule is just a disaster because, again, the game Saturday, Arizona-Dayton, never really a game. Yeah, it had its moments where Dayton got it to within six, and then you get to Gonzaga-Kansas. That's never really a game. And you're waiting there till 6 o'clock. It's like, I remember Saturday, it's 5:30. We're through 1.5 games. And when the games are bad, it's really, you find something else to do. You find something else to watch. It doesn't feel like the tournament. So the schedule, I don't know why they changed it. I don't know why they went to it, but not very viewer-friendly. I mean, to have to wait until midnight on Sunday to do the podcast to talk about the game is ridiculous. You don't need Yale, San Diego State tipping off 9:15 at night, Houston, Texas A&M tipping off 9 o'clock. I mean, the games are going to go to midnight on Sunday night. It's not like Monday's a holiday. So to me, it makes no sense. It's really bizarre the way they do the schedule. And just kind of a flat weekend. Again, I go back to 4 years ago when we had the pandemic and we had no games, and we'd be killing to have a bad weekend of games. So got to keep it in perspective. It's not the end of the world, but it was definitely a flat weekend in terms of the basketball. It does set up for, hey, sometimes you get these upsets, you get these Cinderellas, and I don't know why there weren't any upsets. I think we talked before the tournament, hey, with all these conference tournament one seeds, these regular season conference tournament winners losing in the one bid leagues, maybe that hurts the 13, 14, 15 seeds, and then maybe there's some truth to that. And you know what? Maybe you just have a year where the upsets don't happen. I mean, by definition, by averages, the top seed is supposed to win. So this is, it's weird to think that this is unconventional, but this is just holding form. It's holding form to an extent that was more usual, more pronounced than we're used to. But it does set up for a better tournament, better Sweet 16 at least, where, okay, you got the Cinderellas out, but you don't have a lot of bad matchups. And some of the ones that are still up, the lines are coming up, or some of the lines that have popped up for the matchups. Clemson, Arizona laying 7.5. Iowa State, Illinois, Iowa State laying 2.5. That's going to be a hell of a game. You figure the winner that does play UConn with the way this thing broke for UConn, which did break very well with Auburn losing on Friday. Marquette laying 6.5 to NC State. Purdue laying 4.5 to Gonzaga. That's a fun game. And then Tennessee laying 2.5. So those are the lines that are up. And again, by the time we talk to JVT, maybe we'll have the rest of them. So it does set up for a good Sweet 16, a good Elite Eight. It still looks like it's UConn and everybody else. I mean, UConn against Northwestern, they made Northwestern. I mean, that's why. Boy, what was the score at one point? Just so I get the score right. Of course, I'm in DraftKings, so I can't look at the score. But they made Northwestern basically look like, you know, a Division II team, a junior varsity team. I mean, that was not a fair fight what UConn did. And this is a Northwestern team. That's okay. It's not like Northwestern. Yeah, 40-18 at the half. It's not like it's a Northwestern team that's, you know, it's not DePaul. And they made them look like DePaul. So it's UConn and it's everybody else. You know, maybe Houston can give them a game. Maybe they get picked off. Maybe just the law of averages in terms of the tournament. Hey, you're due for a bad night. And 6 games last year they won in the tournament all decisively. Now that's 2 in the tournament this year they won decisively. Maybe just say, you know what, you're due for a bad night, and that's their weakness is the fact that they're due. It's possible, but it is still UConn and everybody else. But disappointing weekend. Again, Purdue, Oregon, Creighton on Saturday, good. NC State, Oakland was good. Friday had some moments. Thursday was bad. But look, was it terrible? I won't say it's terrible. It was not a good weekend, though. Disappointing. The thing is, you go in with such high hopes. You have such high expectations for this tournament. It's such a great product. Everything, all the games are close. You get upsets, buzzer beaters. When you don't get the upsets and the buzzer beaters, and again, I went back to what I said Thursday. When your bets aren't going well and the games are blowouts, you know, what exactly do I love about this tournament? Because it's not always the best basketball aesthetically wise. The execution's not great. The shooting can be bad. On just sloppiness in terms of, you get a lot of TV timeouts, a lot of reviews. Some of these games can drag on forever. So when the games aren't good and your bets aren't hitting, I'll say what I said Thursday, that it can be a rough watch, rough experience. So we will talk to JVT in a minute. We'll see if this, we'll see if we can get some of these Cinderellas to continue their run here. Again, by the time I talk to JVT, we'll know what Yale did. We'll know if Houston got on to the next round. But if chalk holds in these later games as I'm doing this, then we are really looking at a chalk tournament, which is unusual, but it does make for a good second weekend. So we will discuss all of that. And next, this is the Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. All the games are final. Chalk prevails 15-1 for the weekend for the top seeds. And Houston avoids one of the all-time great meltdowns in tournament history by winning the game in overtime. Next time somebody tells you about momentum, just keep this game in mind, because if momentum had anything to do with it, Houston would have gotten just run out of the building in overtime. But Houston wins, and then Yale never in the game. They get eliminated. They get buried. So San Diego State moves on, and it is all chalk. And let's break it all down with Jonathan Von Tobel from VSiN, senior NBA analyst. JVT, what's going on, man?
Nothing much, man. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but I was kind of underwhelmed by the weekend of college basketball. There wasn't like a ton of drama. There were some good games. Creighton, Oregon was ridiculous and fun, but it wasn't like the most entertaining weekend after the round of 64.
I'm surprised to hear you say that, because I feel like the consensus is the games weren't fun and we all complain about it. And you're kind of a guy who likes to like divert from consensus. You like to be a little bit contrarian and say, hey, it doesn't matter as long as whatever. So I'm a little surprised to hear you say that's more of like a public opinion, but I completely agree with you. Dud of a weekend.
Yeah. And I'll be fully honest, I had to go back and watch some of the games from Saturday. So not being caught up in the moment of everything going on outside of some of the late night games probably took me out of it a bit. I had to go to a wedding and whatnot. So catching up, you know, post result is probably what took it away from me. But, you know, like you said, like generally one of the misconceptions about March is that, hey, man, Cinderella's and runs. By this time, kind of cream rises and you get it. And we're seeing that now with all these top seeds moving on outside of some scares. So maybe that's what it is. There is no like real Cinderella run up to this point, you know?
Yeah, if anything, it's NC State. They're a double-digit seed. They're the only double-digit seed. Clemson's a six seed. But other than that, it is all chalk, which does – look, it kills some of the excitement, but it does make for a really good Sweet 16. You get good games. It's almost NBA playoff-esque where, you know, you don't want to see the Denver Nuggets play. I don't know who's the team. You don't want to see them play the Charlotte Hornets in the finals. You want to see them play the Celtics in the finals. You want to see these good matchups. But like anything like this happens where the favorites go 15-1 straight up and really dominant against the spread straight up, we always ask for the why. We search for the why. Do you have any opinions? Do you have any theories into why these favorites dominated, or is it just small sample size?
I mean, it's small sample size, but it's also like they're freaking good, right? Like if you look at these teams that are winning and moving on, what team do you really have a complaint with given the way that they play? I mean, every single one of these teams has legitimate and real strengths. And it does help, I guess, the way the bracket broke with some of the results in the first round. But for the most part, man, like I think when you look, like these teams have real legitimate strengths, whether it's Tennessee defensively, Creighton shooting and pace, Gonzaga's offense, Purdue with Zach Edey, Marquette, I thought today was really great, even though they kind of let go of the rope a bit. But like if you go down the list of every single one of these teams, they're just, I think, all legitimately good. So while we had this thought that this thing was kind of wide open, it still can be. I don't think I'd really be shocked if, you know, you give me about 7-ish teams that could win this thing. And I would agree at this point right now. But I think it's just like there's a bunch of really good teams, man. And like you said, the Sweet 16 is going to be freaking awesome. The Elite Eight should be even better.
Yeah, it's funny with college basketball. Like, hey, the better teams won. What's going on? What happened? It's like, you know what? The better teams won. It's what's supposed to happen. Right. So it's kind of backwards in terms of that.
No, absolutely. And, you know, and we still got our moments, right? Obviously, we saw Oakland take down Kentucky and we got a few.
Good call, by the way. Great job. You called that before I think it was last Monday or Tuesday with Gil. That was an incredible call by you.
Yeah, there was, and those are the teams for future reference, especially in those first rounds, as I told Gil that day. Those are the teams you're looking for, man. Slow pace, high rate of 3-point shots. They can shoot. You know, when you up the variance like that, you open the door for yourself to get into it. And Oakland did just that. So, you know, we got our little taste of it, but I'm with you for the most part in that. Like, dude, next weekend, every single game looks absolutely awesome on paper. And I cannot wait to see how these things are going to play out.
Any change of opinion for any of these teams that are still alive from, say, a week ago, 5 days ago, these couple of games that we've seen from all these teams, does your opinion differ at all?
I think, I don't know if it's differed so much as like I've really kind of like come around on them, but I think we got a little too down on Arizona, right? And given the way the path broke, like they were kind of the ones I was referencing where, you know, coming out of that Dayton and Nevada wasn't really going to be, I think, too big of a challenge for them. And they kind of play with it a little bit in the first half against Long Beach State, but they end up pulling away, winning by 20. And now they get Clemson. And you're looking at this with a legitimate, obviously, path to an Elite Eight and potentially what happens, of course, from there to a Final Four. And so I think I've kind of come around and I'm like, you know, maybe we're a little too hard on Arizona, given the way that the season ended and whatnot. But I think that this team's legitimately good. They're awesome on offense. They can shoot the ball very well. They don't shoot a ton in terms of volume, but they do shoot efficiently. I think that's to the top of the list. And I didn't think that Purdue was going to get eliminated in like the round of 64 or anything like that. But as much as you can, as a big favorite here, what, 11.5-ish against Utah State? That was really impressive against the Aggies today. Like, they absolutely demolished that team. And now you get a Gonzaga team that you match up pretty well with. Like, I'm really coming around on how good this Purdue team is, how high the ceiling is for this team, you know?
Yeah, and I like that Utah State team. I like Sprinkle as a coach. Yep. And when it was like, I think it was 24-20, I said, hey, you never know. Hey, we'll see what happens. They get hot from three. Edey gets a little tight. They don't make their free throws. And then from that point on, it was just,
it's like a 30-0 run.
It was just a complete bludgeoning. And I mean, it's tough, especially here on the East Coast, where you start these games at noon, you get one good game. But if one of them is a blowout, the way they stagger them, it's like you're sitting there from like 2 o'clock in the afternoon till 6:30 with nothing to watch, which is not the idea of the NCAA tournament. By the way, who did you pick to win it all before the tournament started?
Iowa State was my pick. It's my only. Yeah. What?
That's I haven't heard anyone pick Iowa State. I mean, it's not like you picked I don't know, Howard or something, but I hadn't
Right.
picked anyone, hadn't heard anyone pick them. Are you sticking to that?
Yeah, it's actually my only future that I've got for this whole entire thing.
What number do
So
you have?
I want to say like 27-ish to one, 26-1, like somewhere in that range. Yeah, I
Nice
got it over at
number.
Circa. Look, I love this team, man. Like the backcourt play is awesome defensively. And look, I think, you know, for the audience too, since I covered the team and I was out here, there's some UNLV ties to it, right? So I kind of know it a little bit. TJ Altsenberger's head coach, former UNLV head coach. Keyshawn Gilbert was a 2-year point guard for the UNLV Runner Rebels out here. So I got to watch him up close. So I do kind of understand some intricacies of this team, but I like them a lot. The way they play defensively, obviously, their ability to turn the ball over. They have awesome guard play both ends of the floor. They're not as good in terms of offensive rebounding, so you can't really call them a poor man's Houston. But by the way, 2-1 against Houston this year. The team's great, and I think that this path setting up at the very least, because I did bet them over Illinois, which I don't know what we'll get to, but to take on UConn potentially here in this Elite Eight is going to be absolutely fascinating to watch. But Iowa State was my pick for the whole thing.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's definitely a unique pick. Let's just go through some of the Sweet 16 games as the lines are starting to pop up, and I'll read them off to you, and at the end you can just tell me what jumps out to you, if anything. Arizona laying 7.5 to Clemson, North Carolina laying 4 to Alabama, Iowa State laying 2.5 to Illinois, Marquette laying 6.5 to NC State, Purdue laying 4.5 to Gonzaga, Houston laying 4 against Duke, Tennessee laying 2.5 against Creighton. I'm in Connecticut, so I can't see the Connecticut
It's
San
popping
Diego
up right
State
now.
line. I'm probably 9, 10, something like
10 with a total of 135.
okay. Take it wherever you want to go. What jumps off the page to you?
A couple 9.5s actually appearing too. So I think there's three, and I think I might be a little chalky here in this round. So I mentioned already, I might as well go with it. Iowa State, I like 2 with them here against Illinois. We saw some spots like open 3 and come down. I like this team a ton. And when you're playing an Illinois squad that doesn't have a true point guard against the backcourt that's going to pressure you and force turnovers the way that Iowa State's going to be able to do, I just don't think it's a really good matchup for Illinois. And as we've seen a couple of times throughout the regular season, we saw a little bit in their first round matchup as well against Morehead State in that first half. You know, this is not the most steady defense that Illinois has had in past years under Brad Underwood. And when you look at the Keyshawn Gilbert at the point of attack here for Iowa State, their ability to use those turnovers to get easy buckets going the other way, to be able to throw multiple defensive pieces at a guy like Terrence Shannon Jr. and limit him in one-on-one matchups and feel comfortable so you can stay home everywhere else. I think that this is a team that just matches up well with Illinois. So I lead 2 with Iowa State initially. So that's one of the first bets that I made. And the other, you know, as we kind of mentioned, so I laid it with Arizona too here against Clemson. And I think that when you look at this, and I laid 6.5, it's, you know, 7, 7.5 in a lot of different places now. But I think when you look at Clemson through the first two games, Will, the first thing that just sticks out to me, both your opponents shot a combined under 30% from three, right? Like, that's not going to happen again here against Arizona. They don't have a high volume of three-point shots, but they're very, very efficient. They will play with pace. They will get up and down the floor. They are very versatile in the ability to rebound. And I'm looking for some, you know, regression the other way with your opponent shooting. And I think that's going to be a pretty big edge here for Arizona. And I kind of feel like they're a little slept on, right? Like, everybody was kind of cheering for
I
this
agree.
team. You know what I mean? To like, especially long against Long Beach State, we're like 5 minutes in. You saw a whole bunch of like, okay, here we go again. And it was like, let's let the game play out. And now you saw that, you know, in a relatively sweatless victory here in the round of 32. So I think this team comes into this round a little undervalued, especially against a Clemson squad that I think kind of got lucky with the draw, right? New Mexico, I loved them. I will be very honest. But New Mexico shoots like 19% from three. You absolutely crush them. And then, of course, you get an opponent that shoots under 30% again the next time around. I think that that's about to wear out here against a very efficient Arizona offense.
Yeah, and I'll admit, like, I've been super high in Arizona. I will admit it. I let it get to me that was it Friday night game in the Pac-12 tournament against USC, where they're up 19 at one point, and you turn around and they're down 10 in the second half. They have so many of these lapses, where it's like, you know what? I can't do this to myself anymore. So I admit it got to me. But look, I've said this about them in Kentucky the whole time. I wouldn't be shocked if they lose in round one. Wouldn't be shocked if they're playing for the title that Monday night. It's just those are the two teams that are the most confusing, and we saw it play out with Kentucky, and maybe we'll see it play out to the positive here with Arizona.
Yeah, and look, I mean, now with the benefit of hindsight, the loss for Arizona when you're talking about Oregon, right? Doesn't look as bad in hindsight because Oregon goes on, wins that. They come in, they beat the crap out of South Carolina, right? And then the loss for them is double overtime against Creighton, where they just don't have it anymore. So no, I would agree. Like I think that we're kind of sleeping on how good this team is. And you know, everybody talks about Lloyd being, I think now technically like what, like 1-5 ATS in the NCAA tournament or something like that.
By a point.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So no, I like this Arizona team a lot, especially given the opponent and the draw that they have.
Yeah, and Oregon up four, not just double overtime, up four with 25 seconds left. And you could say, hey, it's house money. We weren't even supposed to make the tournament. We win the Pac-12. We win a game. I mean, my goodness, you're up four with 25. That's a painful one. Same thing with A&M where you say, hey, we weren't even supposed to beat Houston. But when you tie the game the way you did, to lose it is painful. Will the trend of favorites have any effect on your betting? My guess is it won't, but people are going to look at this and say, hey, the trend of favorites has to discontinue at some point. I'm going to jump on the chalk, or people say, hey, I'm going to ride with the favorites. Does that play into your mindset at all?
No, I kind of tend to view these all as like isolated incidents, right? Like, you know, it's that we're talking about neutral sites all in different areas around the country in a tournament that's really spread out. You're getting all these days off in between your next games at different sites now again. I tend to think that was more of a coincidence than anything else. And I mean, so look, it wasn't even the only thing, right? We saw the coincidence, if you will, of these big dogs in the first half covering and then going on getting smoked in the second half and ended up not covering. So, you know, do you continue to do that as you move forward with the dogs? Probably not. So I tend to view them as kind of these incidents that just popped up as opposed to, hey, this is going to be the theme of the tournament. Although I will say I did bet two favorites already and I might add a third. So
what would the third be?
Let's see. So we talked about all those. The other would be, look, I am very anti San Diego State. I've bet against this team in every round of the Mountain West Conference tournament. That ended up coming out profitable. Bet them again, or bet UAB. That worked out today. Did not. Took 5.5 against Yale. Don't think I'm going to get there. Oof. Yeah. Hey, I like those though because I don't have
spoiler
to worry.
Spoiler alert, you didn't get there. I think.
Yeah. Right. And you don't have to worry about it. You know what I mean? I was like, okay, cool. I can stop tracking this. There's no problem. But I think the San Diego State team is very flawed on offense, and UConn does such a good job of doing what it needs to do against opponents like this. They will not let Jaden Ledee beat them. It'll be everybody else. And that is a terrible shooting team. Dead last in the Mountain West in three-point percentage. They don't have a lot of perimeter creation. And this is not San Diego State team of old, man. Like, they used to have Nathan Mensah and others that would be able to just really attack the glass and beat teams up, kind of like a hockey thing, right? Dump and chase sort of deal, generate second-chance opportunities. They're smaller this year. They're not going to be able to do that against UConn. This is a team that will in their last now, I think it's last seven games or 2-5 against the spread. They're one of the worst covered teams in the country. I think they just came into this as one of the most overvalued teams in the tournament. So I bet against them the first two rounds, split it so far. I'm just going to go back to the well here again, and there's worse teams to do it with them with UConn.
Would it be laying the 10, or would it be like a San Diego State team total under, maybe a first half team total under, maybe a little mix of the two or three?
I think you could do San Diego State team total under and lay it with UConn. And I want to see what the market does, because as we talked about, a couple tens popped up initially, but the rest of the spots we're looking at are 9.5. But like Circa opened up 9.5, went up to 10. Other spots, I'm sure, will head in that direction. So I think it'll probably settle in at 10, lay 9.5 here. But that's going to be the play for me. And you guys think you could totally add in an under on a team total for San Diego State.
Yeah. You're an NBA guy. Do you get a little... does your nose get in the air a little bit when you watch the college basketball, the execution at the end of the games, the over coaching? Do you get a little turned off by the quality of the product? Or you just, hey, I love watching it, and you know what? It is what it is.
No, yeah, it is what it is. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, there's moments you're like just the overall skill level too. When you're talking about just play to play, the thing that I will say, I guess I turn my nose up a little bit. The overcoaching does kind of kill you. You know, today at the end of the Texas A&M game, right? You know, that was kind of a nightmare too. So, like, I feel like when you're looking at that and the way that the end of these games just kind of grind to a halt, if we're talking about like crunch time, that does kind of kill you. But for the most part, I actually really enjoy college basketball because, like, I've told my wife, and like when she watches it with me, it's so much slower. You get so much of a better sense of like the game itself and like what they're doing and what the plays are and everything like that you can really, I think, enjoy what's going on the floor.
Good point. Speaking of NBA, we're wrapping up here, where it's like, you know, this tournament's all consuming. By the time the tournament starts, from the time it ends, it's like once it ends, you're basically into that play-in scenario with the NBA. Yep. Anything bettable here? Any awards bettable? Are you at the point where some of these books will let you parlay the favorites, parlay the awards in general? Are we at the point where you just parlay some of the favorites? Any upsets? Well, just give me your thought here. Anything NBA you got?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think we're at a point where it's going to be pretty interesting when you're talking about like parlaying the favorites. I think we're at a point where if you wanted to put something like that together, like Jokic with Dagnall to win Coach of the Year, seems like a pretty safe duo there. And again, you're still going to have to lay a price, but that seems something that's pretty close to being locked up. The rest of them are pretty up in the air, despite the fact that we do have some odds on favorites. You know, I'll give you an example. So Malik Monk is minus 1,000 to win Sixth Man of the Year. Nas Reed's 8-1. Norm Powell's 30-1. I just listened to a podcast with Zach Lowe, who doesn't have a ballot, by the way, and Mo Dekeel, who used to work for inside NBA front office. I think he worked for the Clippers last and works for the Athletic. They both had Norm Powell inside of their top two. Mo Dekeel had him number one. Zach had him number two. And so, like, something like that where I hear, you know, very influential media members talking about it being Malik Monk or Norm Powell for Sixth Man of the Year, and yet you look at the odds, Will, and it's Malik Monk minus 1,000, Nas Reed 80-1, Norm Powell 30-1. That's something that kind of sticks out to me where I would just caution a lot of these are somewhat accurate, but some of the other awards are not as accurate as you would think, and the market's not that predictive. So you can find spots to go against the big favorites like a Malik Monk to win Sixth Man of the Year.
Fascinating, yeah, because we would have all thought – hey, Damar Hamlin, he breathed. He was on the field. He played a couple snaps. Obviously, it's going to be his award. It's a coronation. Let's all applause for him when he wins it. And then, wait, what is this? Joe Flacco wins the award. So we have no idea what other people are thinking. So that's a good look. I don't mind that one.
And I'd point out, too, kind of like along the lines of comeback player of the year, you know, Sixth Man of the Year, while it does have a credential of like, all right, you have fewer games started than coming off of the bench, it is still subjective in that what do you view as the best sixth man? And one of the things that Mo Dekeel brought up, which I brought up with Norm Powell, and I've got him at 45-1 to win the award, it's that he is going to play in clutch minutes. He has been closing out games for the Los Angeles Clippers. So he's averaging fewer points, but just by a small margin than Malik Monk. His actual role, if you evaluate it, is very important for a sixth man. So how many voters are actually looking at something like that? And that's where you get into the subjectiveness of some of these awards and what that's going to mean. And who's going to count, you know, Victor Wembanyama? Yeah, we should throw that in there too. I mean, it's off the board, but rookie of the year, if you want to throw in a third leg on your massive favorite parlay, you can have Victor Wembanyama.
Can Wembanyama steal Defensive Player of the Year? I'm looking like -$7 for Gobert, plus five or so for Wembanyama. Worth a player or not really?
My gut says no, only because there's going to be that old guard that's going to have a vote and say, he's a rookie, he can't win this. And there's stupid
or his
things
team's
like
bad, he can't win it, that kind of thing.
Right, and not look at it with nuance, where if you actually look at it, they're if you took their numbers with him on the floor defensively and extrapolated out over the course of a season, they'd be one of the best defensive teams in the NBA. So I think that kind of worries you. Like, for example, you know, most improved. One of the things that irritates me beyond all belief is that for some reason, second-year guys can't win it, right? You have voters say that. Like, they're expected to make a leap, so they can't do it. So there are those subjective votes out there that say, no, I have these parameters that make no sense whatsoever, but I'm going to abide by them. And I think that would kill any chance that Wembanyama would win it. That's why, Will, like, I've pushed. I wish they would give us like over under order of finish on a ballot. Like, that would be awesome, right? Ooh. That would make these so much more interesting. It'd be giving you more stuff to dive into as a better to have real conversations about where these guys might place. I think that something like that added to a betting menu would be absolutely phenomenal.
I've always been a huge low post fan. I've loved that podcast. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's fallen off a little bit with the guests. You don't get Windhorse anymore. I just feel like it's dipped a little bit.
Yeah, it was. I like the hardcore guests, you know what I mean? Like the good, like, basketball film X's and O's folks. Every once in a while, you know, I think there's still this rotation of the ESPN guests that like aren't great entirely. Yes. Where I would listen to Zach, to your point too, and I think this is probably where you liked it a lot, it was hardcore hoops breakdown. Like, it was X's and O's and it was all sorts of stuff. And there's still a ton of that, but definitely including the ESPN guest rotation has kind of watered it down a bit. And Windhorse has his own pod too now too, which kind of kills it a little bit.
But Windhorse used to be like a semi-regular too. And like Windhorse, he's not even an X's and O's guys, but he's like, hey, I know 2-3 moves down the chessboard. What's going to happen? Even if I can't say it, I can hint at it. And I miss that aspect of it too, which is not anymore.
Yeah, no, you and I are in agreement. I've been kind of searching around. I've got like 2.5 basketball podcasts that I listen to NBA wise. And I'm trying to look for some more hardcore stuff.
All right, JVT, the playoffs will be wide open, but are the Nuggets going to beat the Celtics in the finals? And it's just more obvious, less obvious, more obvious than we kind of expect.
Yeah, I've been getting a lot, and I'm wearing my hat to it and soup and still positive vibes, but I've been getting a lot of flack for my Clippers love. It looked like they were the best team in the league at one point. And now they're kind of falling apart. Bad loss again today for the 76ers. And I was just talking about this with my buddy the other day. It is hard to look past what seems to be the inevitable Denver-Boston clash.
Yeah.
And when you watch those first two games, Boston, people want to sit there and say that, oh, it's just a regular season, it doesn't matter. Matchups matter. And Boston in two games had no answer for Nikola Jokic. And that led to two wins for the Denver Nuggets. And I don't know if they're figuring out what that answer is going to be by the time they meet again in the NBA Finals, you know?
He's shaping up to be one of the all-time great players in the league. I mean, he's looking at a maybe top 10, top 15 player of all time. I mean, it's going to be third MVP in 4 years. He could have easily won a fourth. If he wins a title this year, I mean, you're just starting to get to points where, hey, man, not a lot of people can check the boxes he's been checking.
Yep, dude, he's incredible. Dude, those two games, man, like, he was just taking Porzingis into the post whenever he wanted, backing him down. He's got physicality. He's got
finesse. It's a little Mahomes-ish. It's a little Mahomes-ish where if the game is close, oh, shit, they have Jokic and we don't. And it's almost that simple.
Yep, every time. And their clutch numbers are awesome. Yes. Every time they get into these tight games, they know what to do. They're well-coached. They're versatile. Like, no, they're freaking incredible.
And to continue on the Mahomes point, it's like Mahomes can pass and he can also run. Jokic can score and he can also pass, where it's like you can't just hope he goes cold from the field because he can pass too. It's just you really – I don't know what the answer is.
Yep, no, I would completely agree. And I do hope they play Boston just because we get – well, obviously, I hope it's like Clippers and – I hope, like, you know, the Chicago Bulls make a run because everybody gets injured and the Clippers win it because I have all these investments. But if they do play, yeah, I hope that's that, because that's going to be an awesome series. That would be absolutely fantastic basketball.
If it's Bulls Clippers, I think Kawhi can lock down Andres Nocioni or whoever's on the Bulls right now. JVT, yeah. Let everyone know where they can find you.
At me, JVT, up on Twitter. And then, of course, VSiN.com. Got a lot of write-ups up there, NBA. I'm going to start helping out with baseball writing now that the season's around the corner as well.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, I'm going to start experimenting. I'm going to be our first five guy, our first five innings guy. So that'll be a lot of fun.
A little nerfy here and there?
I don't know about those. Those kind of annoy me. But I like betting first fives to these pitchers. I like to handicap these guys. So that'll be a lot of fun to add that to the repertoire. And VSiN Primetime, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 Eastern.
We will be listening, man. Appreciate you coming on. You're the best. Thanks a lot. We'll catch up here down the road.
Thanks for having me, man. Appreciate it.
All right, that will do it. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you to Jonathan Von Tobel. We'll see you later in the week. Baseball starting soon. Sweet 16, before you know it, draft. Lots of good things ahead. Talk to you at the end of the week.